Rotating, rolling, turning, moving forward, and moving backwards are all impressive gates for modular snake robots. But in this presentation from the Flexible Elements series, Per Jolberg says that the striking sidewinding motion can only be described as beautiful. From IT Conversations. Hi, this is Phil Windley, the executive producer of IT Conversations. Today I'm excited to bring you another program from Flexible Elements with Per Jolberg.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media.
And now, here's our program from Flexible Elements.
Welcome to the Flexibility Envelope podcast. I'm Per, and with me is Juan Gonzalez from Robotics Laboratory, University 3rd, Carlos de Madrid in Spain. We're going to talk a bit about snake robotics and modular robotics in general. Hi.
Hi.
Could you tell us a bit more about how you got into modular robotics to start with?
Yeah. When I was studying my bachelor, for my bachelor thesis, I designed a kind of worm robot, a kind of a snake robot. But then when I started my PhD, I discovered the amazing work of Mark Kim. So I discovered the modules and how you can build wonderful things using that modules.
Yeah, the simple basic structure.
Yes. So I decided to continue working on the snake robot, but in a modular point of view. Yes, designing modules and building, joining together the modules for making the snake move.
Yes, and you did a number of modules, as I am aware of. You started with a very basic one, and then you moved on. Could you tell us a bit more about the first module?
Yeah, one of the problems when I started is that it was impossible to buy a module because it was very new, so...
This was in 1999?
1999.
Yes, yes.
So I said, okay, I should design my own modules.
Mm-hmm.
So I started by designing my modules. The first module was made of plastic, and I cut all the pieces by myself,
mm-hmm.
by hand.
Mm.
And I built different prototypes, and then I have what I've called the Y1 module.
Mm-hmm.
And Y1 means Jim Generation 1.
I think he's going to like that.
Huh? Yeah, because I like the model he designed, so I just copy it.
Yeah, yeah. He's an inspiration to all of us.
Yeah, it's not a real design of mine, but...
Hmm? And then you progress through the different modules. What were the main changes between the first module and the second and third?
The first module, the wonderful thing was that was really cheap, because in Spain we have very very little money.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I started this project without any support, financial support. So I
should. So you did it by yourself,
yes.
Basically.
So I had to do it very cheap, very very cheap. But then I started working with that module for maybe 4 or 5 years. I made instead of cutting by hand, I cut it by a laser
mm-hmm.
printer. But then I discovered that there are some 3D printers, and there is one amazing project called RepRap.
Yes, it's from Bath University. Huh?
So I bought one. I bought it and I built, and I designed the Y1 module version, but for being printed in a RepRap.
Yeah, so there was some design changes that was necessary to be able to print it.
It's the same, and they are compatible between them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But one thing about that is that I can share this
the design file.
The design with all the researchers, so if they have a 3D printer, they can print the module, so they can start working on modular robotics.
Really cheap and really easy.
Yeah.
And we can also build on each other's work, then redo the same work all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like snake robots a lot. I like snake modular robots a lot. So I wanted to make workshops for the students.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that the plastic version It's good for prototypes, but maybe a lot of the students, they drop it, they break it. So
it's not durable enough, basically.
Yes. So we decided to make a very cheap version, but in aluminum.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the current version that it only have 1 month or 2 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
it's very, very new, but it's also compatible. The same size, the same servo, everything is the same. And we also designed a very cheap, very small board.
Circuit board.
Circuit board for controlling the robots in an autonomous way.
Yeah. And it's also physically compatible with the units, right?
It
can be in between two units.
Yes. Yeah.
And then it controls both units, right? If it is assembled, it can control up to 8 units, I understand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But here is a decision of the designer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe if you don't want to spend so much money, you buy only one. By the way, this is also open hardware.
Yeah.
So all the design is available to anyone.
Yeah, that's great.
So if you don't have enough money, maybe you can build just one and you can control up to 8 modules.
Yeah.
But maybe you are interested in having one processor per module.
Yeah.
So you can put one circuit board per module.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This is more complex to control.
Yeah, but you can also implement different gates than I...
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. What kind of gates could you do with one controller module and one? What gate need one module per... controller board per module?
So until now, I've been working only with one controller up to 8 modules. So we were implementing five different gates in a snake robot.
Yes.
That's moving forward, backward, turning, rolling, side-winding.
Yeah.
Just using one
controller. I've seen the side-winding. It's really beautiful, actually. When you see the side-winding motion, it seems to be very close to the actual side-winding snake.
Yeah. And we also implemented a new gate that is rotating. It's not in nature. So, for example, you have the snake. It can rotate, so its head can point to any direction.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting locomotion gate, because if you have a camera, so you can point the camera wherever you want.
It's camera compatible, so to say.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks interesting, huh? So the difference between the number of modules is the gates. So the researcher has to decide, okay, I want to do this gate, I can do with one controller board, but if you want to do the other gates, you have to do more controller boards. Can you talk anything about the cost of the units and the controller boards and the time it would take to assemble one from the open source drawings and schematics?
So if you mean the module, for example, the version that can be printed in a 3D printer, it's so cheap. The servo we are using, it's only 8 euros.
Yeah.
And if you already have the printer, maybe two more euros.
Yeah, yeah. So if you have most cheap. Universities have a printer anyway, and you can also buy the open source printer, the RepRap printer.
Yeah. And the circuit board, now everything mounted and soldered and tested, it's around 34 euros.
Yeah, that's reasonable costs. Yeah.
But of course, if you do it by yourself, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
It's much cheaper.
But then you have to have the facilities to do the circuit board too.
Yeah.
There are some open source alternatives there, and I'll link those in the show notes. That's great. So we've talked a little bit about the gate patterns and the modulars. Yeah. You naturally have a vision for how we're supposed to use this.
Yeah.
Can you talk about a bit more what you thought you would use them for when you started and how that vision have changed over time?
Yeah. If you let me explain something that I think is quite interesting.
Yeah.
When I first started, I started with 8 modules.
Yeah.
Why 8? I don't know. Because I said, okay, it's a good size, so I want this robot to move. But then I said, which is the minimal number of modules that can be used for performing locomotion in one dimension and in two dimensions? So I thought it was a very interesting question, because if you are designing new modules, you only have to build the minimal number.
Yeah, to test. And then, course, when they work okay, you can go on and build more.
And also, if you have a very big self-reconfigurable robot, it can break in how many parts?
Yes.
So you should know which is the minimal configuration. And I discovered that for moving in one dimension, forward and backward, you only need two modules.
Yes, and there's also some lovely videos of that, and I'll also link those in the show notes.
But the interesting thing is that for locomotion in two dimensions, in a plane, you only need three modules. And you can perform all the locomotion gates, rolling, turning, moving forward, moving backward.
Yeah, and this is on a flat surface, I guess.
Yes.
How
yes.
do you think this minimal configuration will be affected if we introduce a normal environment, for instance, an outdoor environment that isn't flat?
We need sensors.
Yeah.
So the first step was to study the coordination. I wanted to learn how to coordinate the models just to move in a flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
But now the problem is that the real world is not flat.
No.
So we need to add sensors, and we have to research on how are we going to process the information for the sensor to make the robot move.
Mm-hmm.
It's an open question. We don't know it. So
that's really interesting, because you are also working on these on attaching sensors to the outside of the robot, basically creating a skin or a semi-skin that gathers information from the world and gets that into the locomotion. Huh?
Yeah, this is our current work.
Mm-hmm.
So now I wanted an application for the snake. Because in Spain, if you don't have an application, you will get no money.
No.
So I said, okay, I would like to research on something very interesting, but at the same time, if it can help to something useful, is better. So I decided to try to design a robot for search and rescue operation.
Yes, yes. Very complex environment.
Yeah, but this is in a very, very early stage of development. We have just beginning 1 month ago.
So what kind of time frame are you looking at there, do you think? How long time would it take to get somewhere where we could start testing it?
I really don't know.
But it's probably years, huh?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
That's interesting. Do you see that there is, if we talk about the modular robotics field in general and any imaginable unit, what would you think would be the first applications that really makes the area break out and people starting to take notice? Probably very simple.
It's a very open question and nobody knows.
No.
But maybe if the modules can be done very small, they are like molecules.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can build objects or you can build whatever you want.
Yes.
But this will be in the very far future, I think.
If we make the modules a bit more simple and that are probably larger, do you see that there is any space where the core of the self-reconfiguring modular robotics, not so much robotics and AI, but rather just the fact that they are modulars, they're modular and they are self-reconfiguring. Do you see that there is an application that could be available to the general public based on those two things and not so much the complex task of understanding the world around you for a robot that's very hard? Do you see any situation where we could use the modularity and the self-reconfiguring properties and focus on those rather than on the robotics part?
I really don't know. But for example, in urban search and rescue, maybe you come into an helicopter and you drop a very big modular robot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the robot can split into very small snakes that try to detect the person. The people.
They could just detect the person, and then the rescue will have to come and get them.
And then maybe they can send a signal, and the rescue team will go there.
So we will use it not to actually rescue people, but as a search dog, basically. But we can have enormous amounts of them.
Yeah.
We can take risks with these robots we can't do with a dog and a guiding.
But being self-reconfigurable is very interesting because they can split, so there are more.
Yeah.
Or snakes,
yeah.
Or they can join together to try to cross.
Yeah, to adapt to the situation. Yeah.
So I think that's the future.
Yeah,
Very, very far.
Yeah. if we have somebody listening that would like to be involved, you said that this is all open source and available. Yeah. It seems to be reasonably easy to get started.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's just I will link to your webpage in the show notes, and they could download everything. Yeah. And the
only problem is that I have very little time, so my webpage is in Spanish. So
it's okay.
I will try to translate everything into English.
I think we might have a listener that could help you too.
In open source,
it's very common that we help each other with transcripts and translations and also updating manuals. When somebody builds this, they might notice that there is some small thing that is obvious to you because you've been doing this for 10 years.
Yes.
That is not obvious for somebody that it might be in high school or early work for their bachelor's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we've talked about this. You're very inspired by Mark Yim's work.
Yes.
And he's been working with this for a very long time.
Yeah.
If somebody out there would like to read part of his work, is there any part of his work that you would recommend them especially? Or
His PhD dissertation.
Yeah.
Is great.
Yeah. And it's I'll try to find a link for that too.
Yeah.
Is there anything from that? It's probably quite long. Is there anything section there you'd like to mention?
In fact,
is it the design of the module, the design of the connector, or the design of the controlling software that is...
In fact, it's the idea of self-reconfigurable robots.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's not a specific part. It's just the idea. But yeah. It's very well written and very easy to read.
We'll certainly link to it. Huh?
But now it looks like a little bit old.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
the beginning.
Yes, naturally. That's great. Huh? So let's talk a little bit more about the central pattern generators and how you explored the gates and also where you're going in the future.
Yeah, that's quite interesting because first I started to study the locomotion in 1D. That is easier.
Yes, the most easiest.
So I'm an engineer, so my first approach was to use a lot of equations. So I said, okay, the robot should have this curve, and these are the equations for the curves, and then I should calculate the inverse kinematics. It was really complex. And it took me a lot of time. It took a lot of time for the processor to calculate all the angles. Mm-hmm. But 3 years later, I discovered that I was wrong, that it was much, much easier if you just make the modules oscillate. Just oscillate. So it's fascinating because when you make an oscillation, you have three parameters. You have an amplitude, mm-hmm. you have a frequency, and you have a phase difference. That it means how it's moving from one module to another. So using only that three parameters, you can generate all the locomotion gates. And that is, it's amazing because it's a kind of emerging locomotion gate.
We see that a lot in modular robotics, the emergent behaviors and properties.
So, but I haven't been using CPGs, but only a very efficient version, just oscillations.
Yeah.
So you only have to apply a sign for calculating it.
Mm-hmm.
So very simple. So that you can move the robot instead of using a laptop or a very big processor, you can use just an 8-bit microcontroller for generating all the gates.
Yes. So all the gates are generated with this small processor.
Yes.
Can you talk a little about which gates there are? There is the normal 1D.
It can move in one direction, in one dimension, forward, backward. It can turn, side-winding, rotating, and rolling. Rolling is a very interesting movement because if you have a camera and the robot fall down, no problem. It can recover itself. So just rolling a little bit and...
Great. Yeah. And you are working with a fellow researcher on something that is where you take research done in the brain research field, I've understood.
Yes. What I've done is a very simple approach for using a very low-cost microcontroller because I'm an engineer, so I'm looking for reducing the cost.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if we want to integrate sensors, we should have a look at the biology. So there are a kind of oscillators that are called central pattern generators that generate different rhythms. So these rhythms also have into account the feedback from the touch sensors. So now the idea is that we want to generate the locomotion gate, but it doesn't matter how is the surface. if it's very sleepy or rough, it doesn't matter. The robot will move in the same way.
Yes, that's really interesting, because what works in the laboratory is one thing, but what works in the real world is another, especially if we're considering the rescue scenarios.
Yeah, and one thing very interesting about CPGs is that all the animals have CPGs.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, for controlling the heart beating or the how our food is moving inside us.
Yes, yes.
So it's all the CPGs are controlling constantly the oscillations of the muscles.
Yeah. So there will probably be a lot to learn from other researchers that have studied the different implementation of CPGs in animals.
But also for biologists, it's very important to they have models of the CPG, so they can test in the robot if that model is okay.
Yeah, so there's a kind of cross-pollination there.
Yes,
yes. So there's an interest for both parties to come together and work on this.
Yes.
Yes, that's really interesting. And this is a work you just started, I assume, and we'll hear more from you in the future.
Yeah. Now I know nothing about it. So.
Yes, but we'll be happy to talk to you in a few years when you have interesting results to share.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And that was it for today. I'll link the interesting things we've been talking on in the show notes. And hope you listen next time.
You've been listening to a presentation from Flexible Elements with Per Jobwork.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media. The post-production audio engineer for this program was John Van Horn. Our website editor was Cheryl Coe. The series producer is Joel Cherney.
This is Phil Wendley. I hope you'll join me next time for another great presentation from Flexible Elements with Per Jobwork here on IT Conversations.